Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today, like normal, is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And it's been a while since the last podcast, but we're getting through the backlog.
Yes.
Been very busy.
We're getting through life.
Yes. I was home for just 2 days last month. I think we managed to record one podcast last month.
Yes.
Of
I think
novella.
So.
But it was because you had read the novella and I'd read the novella. It was Agent Tchaikovsky.
Yes, it was.
Meanwhile, I've been reading some other books. Some books which I've just been rereading to check out the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast Must Reads List, which is our kind of catalogue of, our little canon or whatever you say,
assigned the recommendations.
If you're doing a reading club and stuff like that, and we are struggling, and I've read some other books as well, which we'll get to soon, but chunky fantasy series, it's actually really handy to have chunky fantasy series to read in between other books, because it means you don't have to do reviews quite as often if you've got chunky fantasy books to get to.
Yes.
Anyway, so on this must read science fiction book review podcast must reads list,
yeah,
we realize that we've got books from like the 1940s, the 1950s, the 1960s, the 1980s, 90s, but then the 70s were missing out.
It's really missing in there.
Really missing out. So today we're going to be reviewing a book from 1971.
Okay.
Which is a very 1971 book, which has got all of the things in these other books that we read from the 1970s, which are now a bit weird and obviously very relevant at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But these days it's sort of like, it just doesn't really hold up and it's a bit weird and not very relevant in some ways. So let's talk about this. Why am I reading today's book, which is called A Time of Changes by Robert Silverberg? Well, check out this list of Nebula winners.
Dune. Never heard this.
Babel 17. Flowers for Algernon, The Einstein Intersection, mm-hmm. The Left Hand of Darkness, mm-hmm. Ringworld, mm-hmm. The Gods Themselves, Rendezvous with Rama, The Dispossessed, The Forever War. You know, you can keep going down this list and you're like, oh yeah, they're all books which, you know, are still known today.
Yeah.
It's like Gateway, Dream Snake, The Fountains of Paradise, The Claw of the Conciliator. You know, lots of these books stand
Dream
up.
Dream Snakes.
Dream Snakes, yes. It won the Nebula and the Hugo Award by Vonda McIntyre. We reviewed it because I reviewed all books that won both the Hugo and the Nebula Award.
I have no recollection of that.
We talked about the book.
Sure.
Either way, there's one book in the middle which has always stood out to me, which is this book called, well, it's today's book, it's The Time of Changes by Robert Silverberg, following Ringworld and just before The Gods Themselves on the Nebula Award winning list. Also nominated for a Hugo Award.
And but did win.
They didn't win the Hugo Award, but it's a Nebula Award winner. So, you know, of the two main science fiction prizes that are best known, that are like the popular vote and the writer's vote, the American mm-hmm. Science Fiction Awards, we could call it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, right, let's get to it. And I found it, it was available in the Audible Free Library. So I didn't have to spend an Audible credit on it. And I downloaded the audiobook and went into it knowing that I'd never read it before, but just that, like, and not knowing really anything about it, except that it was on this list of Nebula Award winners. And it's been on my list to get to for, I don't know, years. Since I've been looking at these lists, you know, for the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast, when we did the Hugula Awards, literally 11 years ago, when I read through all of the books which had won both awards,
mm-hmm.
this outstanding, you know, books on the list. Have I read this one? Have I read that one?
Yeah.
This one
doesn't quite fall in that category.
Why? Because it's not as well known?
No, but it doesn't win both.
Yes, but I'm saying because I was always looking at books that had won the Hugo Awards looking at the list that won the Nebula Awards, the books which didn't win either but were surrounded by things like Ringworld and Rendezvous with Rama and The Gods Themselves and The Dispossessed, these other, you know, science fiction books that are still being read today. You know, they're still on the SF Masterworks list. And, you know, Hugula award winning, Nebula and Hugo award. And this book was just sitting there and with a few others as well. And I was like, well, I've not read that book, but I'll get to it one day.
Okay. And the day had come.
And the day came because I spotted it in the Audible Free Library. And I was like, right, going on a work trip, whatever, let's just get it.
Okay.
And this is the blurb. Let me actually just bring up some notes here. So the blurb is this. On Borthan. Oh, no, one second. Yeah. On Borthan, the filthiest obscenities imaginable are the words I and me. For the heinous crime of self-bearing, apostates have always paid with exile or death. But So this is the idea that you're on a planet, and it's one of those kind of planets where everything is, right, humans are there, but it's not Earth, but there's weird stuff going on and something very different about society. There's some, one thing that's very different about society.
Right.
So when you start reading it, you're like, oh, this is very much the Left Hand of Darkness, mm-hmm. which is on a, this is also a cold planet, you know, and there's a way that you can, there's other things that it has in common with the Left Hand of Darkness.
Which came out before this book,
like 2 years before. Well, yes, because it was the Nebula Award winner 2 years earlier. So
yeah, okay.
It's quite a Left Hand of Darkness. But there, you know, people, there's only one gender and people go in between. Mm-hmm. And then someone from a different planet comes down and, you know, and then it's told from the point of view of someone from the Left Hand of Darkness planet, like coming with this envoy from...
Yeah.
Where
I remember, yeah.
In the Heinisch. This is pretty similar, but it's all told from the point of view of a local, but later on an Earthman does turn up who doesn't have the same thing different about them that
and
all the locals do.
And he keeps saying
do.
A and me, I and me.
Yes, so the idea, yeah, and he can say I and me because it doesn't mean anything to him, but everyone who speaks well on this planet mm-hmm. never says the word I or me mm-hmm. because it's about rejecting yourself. Like you have a name and you have family members, but it's this one like social construct mm-hmm. which is like social compacts that we're not going to refer to ourselves in the first person or not going to refer to us, you know, it's not even us mm-hmm. So that's the way it sets up, and I started reading it as like, oh, this reminds me of some other science fiction books where there's a similar kind of thing, like banned words, if you know what I mean, like in
yeah.
like 1984 there's the government enforces a way of speaking with the view to also then...
enhance the... Or yeah, change the thinking.
Yeah, to yeah. change the thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense.
And there's other books that have done this as well. Mm-hmm. And then I got about halfway into this book and something happened. And I was like, oh, that's even more familiar. And it turns out I have read this book before, but it was long enough ago that I didn't know who Robert Silver... I mean, I guess I knew who Robert Silverberg was, but I didn't know that there was even a thing called the Nebula Award or that this book would won it or the... You know, it was like... So I obviously read this book in the 90s at some point.
It was probably in one of the libraries
went to. No, it would have been too old to be in one of the libraries.
Okay.
It was probably a... you know, like from, because not only would I go into the libraries, I'd go into every single charity shop that I came across,
right.
Go to the book section
yeah.
and then buy for 50 pence any science fiction book mm-hmm. that I could find in a charity shop.
Right.
Didn't do that with the fantasy books because often there was these like chunky, you know, long-running series.
Yeah.
And it would start with book two and stuff. And I'm not doing that. But science fiction, generally, you could get some pretty good gems. So, so me going, oh, I've never read this book and I want to get to it. About halfway through
not
the book
true.
I was like, oh, it's this book, you know, because yeah. something yeah, I was like, oh, it felt familiar but not because of that. And then as it went through to the end I was like, oh yeah, this book. And and then I remembering some other things about, or like I remembered my reaction to some of the other things. And but it's one of those weird things that you just don't know which books stick with you.
Yeah. And what from that book?
Yeah, I mean, there's many times when I'll start listening to or start reading a second book in the series and there'll be characters and I'm like, no idea. And they talk about things that happened in the first book. I'm like, no idea. And then I'll go back and read the Wikipedia page. And I'm like, no, what is that? And it's only when I go back and listen to the podcast that I recorded about the first book, I was like, oh, that book with these characters and that setup. So that mm-hmm. has happened a few times. But yeah, it's quite funny how just little any of this stayed in my brain from the 90s. So... Yes, it's the idea being that there's this... and I went through some other people's reviews on Goodreads to find...
Oh, okay. There are people who have, like... Sometimes you read a book and it's so unknown.
Like, it's not like Fire Upon the Deep... what is it? Fire in the Abyss by
yes.
Stuart Gordon, where it reminded me of the book.
You're the only person who read this book.
Like, am I the only person who's read this book? Because this other book is very much like it, but there's literally one review and two ratings on the whole of Goodreads. I was like, I'm one of two people in the world who've read this book and
very
remember it.
Very funny, yeah.
So, yes. But I wanted to find some examples, like quotes from the book, because I don't have the book, I've only got the audiobook, and I wanted to find some quotes from the book to show what people would say. Mm-hmm. And instead I found someone explaining what you should say. So you're not allowed to say I or me. So he said, and then he's then explaining how you should talk in an even higher standard. He said, I should have not have said one would have a room, but rather is there a room to be had?
Oh, indirect speech.
Yes, yeah. Super indirect. Mm. At a restaurant, it is wrong to say one will dine on thus and thus, but rather these are the dishes that would have been. Oh, sorry. These are the dishes that have been chosen, and so on and so on, twisting everything into a cumbersome passive form to avoid the sin of acknowledging one's own existence.
Right.
So yeah, this is a big part of what the book is about.
It's funny. This sounds literally like an assignment in the university for a writing.
It does study. Feel like that. However, the book itself is written from someone who is now disagreeing with this. I'll get onto it in a bit. But it's a memoir of someone who's decided to embrace the self and embrace saying I and me. It starts off with a I am this person, this is me, and this book is about me. Right. I will now tell you everything. And the conceit of the book, it's that it's a first-person memoir, but it's a very first-person memoir. That, like, the idea of exposing and sharing every single thing about his person and his history and his story and everything that he's afraid of and everything that he's ashamed of and everything that he's done wrong and all of that, that is self-bearing, as they say, about talking about yourself.
Yeah.
And it's not just talking in the first person, but it's like sharing these things.
Yeah.
This book is like the very most first person book as a political and like anti-establishment, like I'm starting a new cult of, you know, people who are going to say I and me. And so the book, once you understand what the book is doing, you're like, this is very clever. And it is like a writing exercise. It is like, how much can one person reveal about himself and tell about himself to the point where it's kind of overbearing how much he's sharing that you wouldn't normally write in a memoir, but he has to write it all down because it's important for him to self-bear. You know what I mean? It's kind of clever. It's not like 1984 clever or Left Hand of Darkness clever, but, you know, it's Robert Silverberg is really trying here.
Okay.
So, but then as he tells a story, I'm always a little bit put off by, like, I would have liked the writing exercise to be at the start of the book. It's all told in what you think is third person passive. Mm-hmm. I would have liked the, like, once I got into it, I was like, the writing exercise should have been write in this really passive voice at the start, and then over time, as the character grows up and changes, he starts using the word I and starts like self-reflecting and revealing things about, you know, it felt like there was like a missed trick there.
Okay. Like, there was no transition period.
No, because he starts off, like, the book opens with him saying, I am me, this is me, I, me, me. Like, really, like, putting it out there, what's important about this book is that he is self-bearing in this book. Like, he's writing something which has never been written in the society because it's like this, you know, very low population planet, sparsely populated with just these bits and pieces, very high social control in these different areas.
Yeah. So, okay.
So yes, that's the book. And then I, of course, realized that when I read this in the 90s, all of this just went straight over my head. Like, I didn't, I probably read it, but like didn't understand it. Like didn't understand, oh, what's the passive voice?
Yeah, Luna, you know, like, you read like I, me, me, me.
Well, I don't know. So anyway, it goes, so it goes like this. Our main character, the rest of the blurb is, but after his eyes are opened by a visitor from Earth, Kinal Dararal, a prince of Salia, risks everything to teach his people the real meaning of being human. So that pretty much says what happens in the last quarter of the book.
So he becomes a missionary.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. The first two parts of the book is where he's a prince. He's the second son of a king of this whole area. Mm-hmm. And his father dies in a hunting accident, but he's the second son. And you don't want to be the second son when the king dies, because now you're the brother of, you're the younger brother of the king. And that's a dangerous situation to be in, because then it's your job to either kill your brother and become king yourself. Mm-hmm. Because then you're next in line to the throne. You have to make sure there's a hunting accident with your brother before he has a male child or whatever.
Right.
That. So he's like, I am out of here. And his brother was like, no, you're fine, you're safe. He's like, yeah, I'll just be over here in exile in this other. So he exiles himself to another country, and then that doesn't go so well, so he goes somewhere else, and he goes into the wilderness, and he lives out there, and then there's lots of adventures along the way. And in the end, he goes down to this trading city where he's got some like family connections, or not family connections. Everyone on these planet in the high society has got a Bond brother and a Bond sister.
Okay.
And the Bond brother and sister aren't Bond brother and sister to each other.
Right.
They have another one. So your Bond brother also has a Bond sister, and that Bond sister also has a Bond brother, and you can like, there's this like web of connections and things. So
okay.
It's like a way of society holding itself together.
Yeah.
Because they don't have like colleges that people go together and, you know, stay
okay.
In the fraternities.
Yeah.
And
it's all about the networking.
Yeah, it's like a networking when there isn't like a Masonic lodge for rich people to hang out with and give each other weird handshakes, and there's not a, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Elks club and what do you call it?
The golf club.
Yeah, yeah. There's no golf club. So what do? You go to hunting parties and you hang out with your Bond brother and sister, and that creates a web.
Right.
And you can be that your Bond brother and Bond sister are the only people you can be open with and express any sense of self with. And you're not allowed to do that with anybody else.
Right.
Your real family, whatever. So anyway, he goes down and he connects up with the family of his Bond sister,
mm-hmm.
and falls into a really cushy job because they're like, hey, you're a neutral person here. You mm-hmm. And then it tells the whole story of his life up until being an ex-prince, a lumberjack, someone who like was homeless, then got into the right thing and married, whatever, all that kind of stuff. And then once you get all the way through like a big chunk of his life until he's settled, he's successful, everything's on the plate, like everything is laid out for him, his life is good, he knows what he's going to do with the rest of his time, he takes some drugs and meets an Earthman, takes some drugs, and then starts a cult. And I'm like, oh, right.
That's the 70s part I was looking
for. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. This is the 70s part. This is the 70s part. And I'm like, oh, it's a story about somebody taking these, like taking drugs for the first time and it changing their life and them getting a new view onto what life is and what society can be. And we can just free love each other and we can know each other. And that's, you know, there's a lot of it. It's the drug has like this, it's also got like this telepathic ability that if you take drugs, this drug, and the other person takes drugs and you're in the same room with them, you suddenly have a telepathic link with each other, which again is pure like 60s, 70s sci-fi where there can just be telepathy just because the people, I know, they just think hard enough and they can be telepathic.
Cool.
Yeah, again, there was that inflection point where suddenly telepathy is either fantasy or you need a machine or some kind of network or implant to be it for telepathy to be a thing. But this is back in the day when it could just be
drugs.
Like, yeah, just take some drugs and then just vibe it out.
And they are like, you know, psycho enhancing and it's
psycho
all cool.
This,
and suddenly
that.
You know more than everybody else.
Right. And the other conceit of this, it's a cold planet. Oh yeah, I mentioned that before because this thing of like somebody, like someone from outside coming in and upsetting the apple cart and, you know, doing this kind of stuff. So this is the first person narrator. At the end of the book, you know he's done something wrong all the way through the book because it's like it's all written. Oh, and if I get found before I finish this, I have to finish this story before I get found. So he's on the run from something.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, it's revealed there's some tragic thing that he gets blamed for. And they're like, yeah, this drug's bad. And then it ends in this kind of fun, ambiguous way. It's sort of like, oh, he's saying, and then I went on. And if all goes to plan, a new religion will spring up and we'll expressing ourselves and using I and me, and we'll all be open and free, and we'll use this drug to connect each other's minds. And society, there'll be an overthrow of society, and we'll all look at Big Brother and say, I love you too, or whatever, you know, all this kind of. I'm just saying, it's like a little bit, it's a little like there's some ambiguous endings to some of these books where you're like, and everyone lived happily ever after, and the revolution was great, or sort of like, or did he actually go and betray people in room 101, and just life carries on as normal, and we are still under this oppression. So it's this weird thing that the oppressive society is language based, like 1984.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also other oppression, like things will go wrong, you can be thrown in jail, and life is brutal on this cold planet. So people, it's one of those things, is like, no, everyone has to be this strict, because if we're not this strict, you know, society will collapse and we'll all die. And the remnants of Earth is kind of looked at. Yeah, even Earth collapsed in the future, you know, so we can't let that happen. Let me go down through some of my other notes, and if I've got some more notes, we'll Bond brother sister. Oh, it's very important that Kinel Dorivan has a massive cock. It's very important for the story that he's got a massive cock and that lots of women want to sleep with him, except you're forbidden to sleep with your Bond sister.
Obviously.
So that's not allowed. So that's his main obsession in life.
Oh my God. What do people? What?
He's got
not,
a massive
people,
cock.
Not people. Men. What do they?
Very 1970s.
I think that Freud got it completely wrong. Men are so obsessed with long penises.
What's more important that he's
so unhealthy?
What's more important to the story that he's like women want to sleep with him and he's got a massive cock is that he comes too quickly. He has premature ejaculation. He can't last more than 2 seconds and then it's over. And no matter what he does, he can't do it. And all the way through the book, this is like a continuing thing that sees himself as a great man, but he's got this constant shame of premature ejaculation or immediate ejaculation. And I mean, it does get solved a bit later on, but this is really important. I even put it here in full capitals. He has a massive cock ! But he comes too quickly. This seems to be very important !
So sounds like trauma.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. God. It's just sort of like the thing is, he would be like, I was going to say, self-obsessed, like. But that's kind of the point of the book. You know,
it's
one of those weird things that it's like the whole thing is a writing exercise in what if a bit of Left Under Darkness and a bit of 1984 and a bit of, I mean, again, it's not as clever of any of those books, but it's very well written. Like, it's very cleverly written, but it's written for someone who is constantly focusing on the negative parts of his life.
Right.
And how bad things are, like, and how bad he is.
Yeah. And it feels very much like, you know, how in some of the Catholic some of the writings that we get about Catholic people, how they chastise themselves.
Yeah.
Is that the word?
Chastise themselves?
Yeah, you know, how they get out this...
Self-flagellation.
Yeah, the thing, and they hurt...
Flagellate themselves.
Yes. Hurt. And this is a bit like, you know, it's a guy who writes it down so... in detail about all the things he's
this is
doing
the point
wrong
of the
and feeling
book,
wrong,
and this is what the story is. Yeah. In the same way that all of these other books here, you know, I was talking about Gateway. A huge amount of that is the guy talking through his mummy and daddy issues with the psychiatrist. You know, you talk to your shrink, you talk to your psychiatrist. That's what loads of these books are. And right. I've mentioned this in the previous episodes where we've talked about books from like the 1950s and 60s and 70s. Yeah. A lot of them, the frame story is, and then I went to my psychologist and talked through these issues. You know what I mean?
I think part of like the suddenly drugs coming in, which isn't surprising.
Yeah.
The other thing I think is what really came up in the 60s and 70s was that people... started going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But my point is that in a world where you can't say I and you can't self bear yourself to other people and you can't express yourselves or talk about your problems, and that's literally what the society is based around, that you shouldn't be talking about yourself.
Yeah.
Like, we have a society based on we just get on with things and it's like, yeah, so nobody can talk things through, and if your Bond brother and Bond sister aren't open to it, everyone just sits there and it's really unhealthy. So yes, this is so much of a book of the 1970s. The drug use, the setting up a cult, the free love, the, you know, mind melding, the drugs, the psychology, the psychiatrist, all of this stuff to make this book like... painfully 1971.
Yeah.
In a way that some of these other books aren't, but because this is so well focused, it's so focused on one thing, which is let's spend a lot of time in the head of someone who's not that nice, not that pleasant, and it also
really broken.
But is also telling us about how, you know, how screwed up he is and how what he's afraid of and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's weirdly enough, because this is a prince, it feels very much like, you know, this is Robert Silverberg. He also did the Madripoor, the Lord Valentine's Castle, which is the book about the juggler who it turns out not to be a juggler. He turns out to be the next in line to the, you know, the throne or whatever. He's the next prince and they steal his mind. And that's about him regaining his mind back.
I remember you really enjoying those books.
It's a pretty good, like 3.5-star books, those kind of things.
Yeah.
But that's about someone who's lost his memory and rediscovers the prince, and then it's a travel log across the country for him to reclaim the throne. And this book feels like, again, we're talking about a prince, but it's like the opposite of Lord Valentine, where Lord Valentine is charming and, you know, agreeable And I was thinking, ah, maybe Lord Valentine isn't all any of those things, but he just doesn't want to, like, the story is written by somebody who isn't always concentrating on how, you know, how he ejaculates too soon every time he has sex. No, that's what I'm saying. It's sort of like, does it, at the heart of all of these stories, is there somebody who is unpleasant and just wants to talk about sex all the time and always talks about how, you know, constantly talks about how fretful it is that he ejaculates too quickly? Is the, oh, everyone, I ejaculate too quickly, just always in the background of all of the stories that we read, except that the main character doesn't want to self-bear that much.
Other people are just not so self-honest.
Yeah, other people aren't self-bearing, and he is self-bearing to the point where he's going to be tracked down and killed for it and other things. But you know what I mean? Like, that it's so forbidden to talk about yourself in that way that... Yeah, you know, like, what stand-up comedy in that place? Like, there can't be any... There's, like, how do jokes work? And it feels, like, very inhuman that the people there have been bred over thousands of years to exist in this place. And he's, like, an anomaly there.
Right. Okay.
And society is there. It's very strict. It's, like, 10,000 years people have lived here with this kind of, you know, form of speaking. And it's only when this Earthman turns up and is all pesky and so he's all like, hey, me, I'm doing fine. And everyone's like, oh! And faints because the Earthman said, I. But this is the one guy that he connects with and like, ah, you're on my way.
I understand that.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the book. I'll finish the review.
Okay.
There you go, 26 minutes. That's
and,
the book.
So what's your verdict?
I don't know, 2.5 stars.
Okay.
Shouldn't have won the Nebula Award. Actually, let's see what other books came out that it was up against in the Nebula Award. It was up against The Bywilder, The Devil Is Dead, Half Past Human, Margaret and I, none of which I've heard of, and The Lathe of Heaven, which I have heard of, but I think is one of Ursula K. Le Guin's weakest books that I've read. So,
okay.
If it's the book that I think about. Yes. So, yeah, sure. Good, I guess.
Someone needs to win, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That and that's the book that won. It's the most 1971 book of the... Actually, let's look at what the Hugo Award was at that same time. Can I... Hugo Award for Best Novel. Science... Well, I guess I can just... I'm on the Nebula Award. Here we go. Hugo Award. Was it 1971
yep.
or 1970?
1971.
In the year this was nominated, which could have been 1970. 1971. Wait a second. Oh. Well, I can't find it. Oh, no, here it was in 1972. To Your Scattered Bodies Go by Philip Jose Farmer won that year, which is a better book. So there
you've read that one.
Okay. Yeah. It's about where they go up the river and like Hitler's there. It's good.
okay. They go up the river and Hitler's there.
I think that's the book. A Dies in Earth is, yeah. He wakes upon the mysterious shores of a river, naked and hairless. All around him are other people in a similar situation. Yeah, it's about the place where everyone goes when they die. And there's a big river and they go up the river and meets people.
Right. Okay.
Oh, no. Hermann Göring is who he meets.
Close enough.
So not Hitler. I got my Third Reich leaders mixed up just forgot which one it was. So just said Hitler. Anyway. Let's look at Goodreads. Juliana's just looking at me raising her eyebrows all the time. So let's go over here.
No, I'm not.
On Goodreads.com, this has got a 3.69 rating. And remember, the scale is 3.5 stars is a very bad book and 4.5 stars is a very good book on Goodreads. Everything gets compressed down into that one rating of stars between 3.5 and 4.5.
It's just a little bit better than...
This is, I would say, this is about a 1-star book if you do the translation across. 3.69. Let's see what my friends think about it. Kevin rated it 5 stars. Jeff rated it 4 stars.
Okay.
Walt O'Hara rated it 3 stars. Ryan Fisher rated it 3 stars. Paul Spence, 3 stars. Yeah. So a lot of 3-star kind of stuff here. Jason rated it 4 stars. He says, in the tradition of Anthem, that's the other book where people don't say I. They only say
okay,
we.
Yeah.
And Brave New World in 1984. So it's like that kind of thing. He explores the relationship of the individual to society. Another short but powerful novel by one of sci-fi's best writers. Let's say, it is very well written, but you've got to spend a lot of time with someone who's very self-obsessed for plot reasons, bearing what's wrong about himself for plot reasons, for thematic reasons.
Yeah.
And and the story is kind of starts off adventure story and ends with, I'm going to start a cult.
Amy
rates it 2 stars and Captain America rated it 1 star. Happy to be done with this. What a boring slog. I didn't think it was boring. I just didn't think it was... good. let's have a look at on Audible it is 8 hours and 15 minutes and it's narrated by Pete Bradbury, who I remember did a good job, but I finished his book a few weeks ago, so
okay.
There you go. Anything else that you need to know about it?
Not really.
Okay,
you kind of covered everything.
Yeah, I think I did. It's a book,
but
it's,
this one
it's
does
1971
not... But this one does not make it onto our SFPRP must-read list.
It was never in consideration for the SFPRP must-read list.
It could have been another 70s book.
It was just because it was on the Nebula Award list, and I was like, I've not read that one, so I'm going to read it one day. And then I found it on the Audible Free Library, and then I read it, and I was like, oh, I have read this before, but I guess most of it went over my head when I read it when I was like 14 or 15 years old, and I was just like giggling at the massive cock and, you know, ejaculation stuff.
Yeah.
Let's wrap it up there.
Okay.
Oh no, let's go over to Goodreads and I'll just say let me just look at the other books that are on my to read or my read currently reading list, which I haven't done a review of.
Yeah.
The Quantum Magician, which is on the SFBRP must reads list.
Mm-hmm.
And the Inversions Culture No. 6 by Ian and Banks, also on the SFBRP must reads list. I reread those just to see if they're on. And that's what I said. I might do an individual episode where I re-listen to the previous podcast that we did,
yeah,
you know, 10, 15 years ago when we reviewed these last, and then do an updated solo podcast. Maybe I will do it.
Yeah.
And then City of Last Chances and the House of Open Wounds, which are Adrian Tchaikovsky's fantasy series, ongoing fantasy series.
Okay.
And I finished those. So they're the first two books. So the next SFBRP that I'll do with you is... tell you what's good about the first two books in Adrian Tchaikovsky's Tyrant Philosophers fantasy series.
Okay, so it's still ongoing.
Yeah,
and
like
these
the
are the
third
first...
book is out. The third book came out last year,
okay.
And I think the fourth book is out this year. So
okay.
It's like again, like I say, it's ongoing.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So I'd like to review the first two of those books as a pair,
okay.
As a single episode,
it sounds
and
good.
That will be the next episode that I do with you this week or whenever it comes up.
Yes.
What do you think?
Good idea.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Two books in one?
Yeah.
I think it's good.
Yeah, it's very good.
Right, I think that's
all
it.
All right.
Really, that's it.
Yeah.
Email me, luke@juggler.net. Follow me on Blue Sky and Mastodon and Instagram and Juliana in those places as well. You can find the links in the show notes. You can support us on patreon.com. So go to patreon.com/LukeBurridge to support the podcast and help me pay for my Audible subscription and other books that we both read.
Yes.
That would be very handy. Or just support us financially. That would be very handy too.
Thank you so much for the people who already do that.
You do that. Yeah, we've got a few SFBRP listeners who support us there. That really is it from us. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.